So it was a wild end of the summer for the Blue Jays. What was it like seeing Paul Beeson down the stretch, knowing this was his last year? How was he around the team and the whole environment?
Well, he was enjoying it. You know, they were in first place. It was certainly exciting baseball. They were down 2-0 against Texas and then came back, tied it up, and won the bat flip game. And then they were down 3-1 to Kansas City, and they came back and won the first one. And I would say first and third, nobody out. You should be able to have a 9-1 and 2 coming up. You should be able to get a ball in play. They didn't get a ball in play until it was two out. Navarro struck out, Revere struck out, and then Donaldson grounded out. But you know that old line about there's a strikeout's the same as an out? I don't believe that. I mean, they get a fly ball there, and Navarro hits a fly ball. They head to extras, and who knows what happens.
Do you have any examples or stories about Beeston during the playoff stretch? Or even Anthopoulos?
No, he was Beeson is a very he's not like Steinbrenner or he's kind of like Bronfman when I covered the Expos. He's not around that much. Spring training, he's there once a year and for their banquet, their end of the season banquet, and he's there every night, but he rolls in like, I don't know, bottom of the first as soon as he gets off the phone or whatever, and then he sits. He and Howard Starkman, they sit in a bunker like Harold Ballard and King Clancy, and they you know, sometimes Cito Gasson's in there, sometimes Devon White or George Bell, or sometimes it's just the two of them. But no, I don't have. I did see him in. He was on the road both in Arlington and Kansas City. He saw me and he turned to this guy from New York, from the New York Post, and he said, "Hey, George King." He said, "George, why don't you come back on the charter with us?" You know, this is after game two, and George said, "Are you nuts? I got it going right." And Beeson says, "Well, that's why I asked you. I knew you couldn't come." And to bother Elliot, he could see me coming. You know, he knew I would hear him ask. But the writers haven't been on the charters, I think, since whatever Tim Johnson's last year was, whatever year that was, 98, 99, Clements' first year here. Yeah.
I just want to ask you, what's the one thing you remember about this 2015 season?
I don't know. One thing, man, that's a tough one. I mean, the easy one would be to say the bat flip or something. I just think the enthusiasm around the park, you know, like a couple of times. I went down to meet people who were here from Kingston. Another buddy from Kitchener was here, and I went outside, you know, half an hour before first pitch where I'm not usually there. And you know, everybody's dressed in blue, and, you know, the enthusiasm and the excitement, it wasn't like that in 92, it wasn't like that in 93, it wasn't like that in 1985, and it was such a young crowd. It was, I think that would be the thing, because, I mean, when they moved into the Sky Dome in 89, in June, there was a story, I think it was in the Star, that their average age of the fans was 52 or 54 or something like that. No way. The average age now is probably about 28. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be the one memory, because that's so sustainable, whereas Batista's was one at bat, or Donaldson's walk-offs were one at bat here, one at bat there.
When you were watching that seventh inning, given everything, the events that happened, what was your first impression when they had the torched call at the top half of the inning? And have you ever seen Blue Jay fans react like that with such force between throwing stuff on the field and the heavy booing and things of that nature? Have you ever seen anything like that happen in the Sky Dome before?
No, I've never seen anything like that before. I was thinking of that line, stay classy, San Diego, you know, like we really didn't look too good, I don't think, if you were watching, sitting on your chair in, I don't know, San Francisco or Omaha, Nebraska or someplace. You, what are these guys? It was like a soccer crowd or something. They were looking, somebody just got a red card, I think, or a yellow, whatever. They were so irate. The conspiracy theory was that Bannister was the catching coach with Pittsburgh last year, and Martin was there last year. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people thought, well, maybe Bannister picked that up, that Martin dropped to one knee, and then he threw it after he looked the runner back to third. And Cho has this habit of using his left hand to tug on his right elbow and sticking the bat out. But I talked to Martin about it, and Martin said he was never warned about it, and he's never had it happen once. And, you know, it's not like it'd be like something like the yips and throw the ball over the pitcher's head with a mid guy on third. Who was that? Oh, Dale Murphy, and they moved him to center field, and, you know, he won the MVP back-to-back years. There was never any warnings or anything like that, according to Martins. But there was a lot of venom in the park. That's, you know, and then whatever it was 25 minutes later. Oh, the part I enjoyed was later was Sam Dyche ripping everybody, the guy that gave up the home run, and he says, you know, the Batista's an idiot and Encarnacion's an idiot. Like, I mean, there's two bench-clearing brawls, and why are there brawls? Or why they weren't brawls. Why did the benches empty? It emptied because he came down and yelled at Encarnacion, mm-hmm. who was trying to, at least from my vantage point, was trying to tell the people to shut up and quit throwing stuff. And then he goes and whacks Tulowitzki on the bum. Well, I'd never seen that before, ever. And then he's surprised that Tulowitzki says, "Get your hands off me."
It really just sounded like everyone in the crowd just had one too many diet sodas, eh, Bob?
Yeah.
Speaking of beer and pandemonium and all that, what was going on in Baltimore, Bob, when Batista and them were pouring beer on your head and everything? I saw a couple pictures floating around.
No, that wasn't in Baltimore. That was here. That was the day they clinched
the playoff spot, no?
The playoff spot on the Saturday, and I was talking to Martin, and they're acting like a bunch of five-year-olds, and Martin says, "What's the big deal?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Do you need me?" And I said, "No, I don't need you." And he said, "Well, I'm out of here," and he was gone, like 5 minutes after the doors opened. And so then Hawkins was there, LaTroy Hawkins. I said, "How many of these have you been through?" And so he figured it up, and it was 11. And I think when I got upstairs, I figured out Martin had been through like 7 or 8. But usually it's like when you win to go on, or, you know, you win the division. Well, these guys, all they'd done is clinch the second wild card, which they actually did before they got on the field. And they didn't even cover the lockers because there wasn't going to be any celebration. But they just... They just went crazy. So Hawkins says, they must have got you wet a lot of times. I said, "No." I said, "I never really got wet in 92 or 93 or 87 or 85 or 89. I said, "But I was standing in Baltimore in 96, and Jimmy Key came up. And I said, "You got a second?" He said, "Yeah, just a second." And then he came up, and he said, "Who's that over there?" And I turned, and he stuck the neck of the champagne bottle down my back with the thumb on it. And then he took the top off, his thumb off it, and the cold champagne went right down my back. That's the only time anybody ever got me. So, anyways, I was talking to Saunders 5 minutes later, and then Edwin comes up, and Encarnacion comes up, and he asked me something. And then all of a sudden it was Edwin and Batista. And the Japanese guy, the TV guy from Japan, showed me this thing. He videotaped it. And Kawasaki was in there.
The team mascot?
Yeah, the mascot. And then but Pilar told me in Baltimore, he said he was in on it, which I didn't even see him. But so I get out into the hallway, and somebody flipped a towel at me. And I look up, and here's who's looking at me but Hawkins. I said, "That was you." And he said, no, it wasn't." So we got to Baltimore, and he bought me a poncho.
Like a rain poncho.
But I went to the Orioles room first, so I didn't get wet.
Other than Joe Carter's big home run to win the World Series, any other bigger moments than bigger moments than Batista had?
I still think Alomar's home run in '92, which put them up 3-1, a game within the World Series on the Saturday on the Thanksgiving weekend when we were in Oakland, and, you know, when he threw his arms up in the air and all it did was tie the game, but they won it in extras. I think that's more important. You know, that was, they'd always been, you know, with 85, they lost the final 7 games of 87, 89, 91 they lost. So this one finally got them over the hump, and I think that's the... Well, the previous regime, this is the only stadium in baseball that doesn't have a... They have a statue outside, but it's of a businessman. So they were supposed to put Alomar's picture out there, a statue outside with his arms in the air after he hit the home run for the 40th anniversary next year. But I don't know whether that will continue under the new regime. But I would say Alomar's would be second to Carter's, and then... And then I guess Batista's because I won it. And then I think Sprague's in game 2, a pinch hit home run off Reardon because they would have come home from Atlanta down 2-0. Instead, they come home tied 1-1. Yeah.
You sound pretty close with Russell Martin and Saunders and all the Canadian guys. What was it like for them being at home, kind of at home in Canada here, seeing the country not only come together, but playing for their country in a sense?
Saunders, he I was surprised he'd never ever won anything. So he was not even in the minors. So he was very into it. And Martin, that first celebration, he wasn't into. But I'll tell you, Martin was certainly into it. When, but remember, because they scored the lead run after he hit the ball, after he hit Cho on the throwback to the pitcher.
Yep.
But when Batista hit the home run, I don't think anybody in the, like, he was happier than anybody in the 200, the 500, or anybody. Martin was the most, you know, because what a way that would have been to have lost.
Yeah, it would have been horrendous for him, especially being Canadian.
Yeah.
Is there any other stories that's really stood out to you from this playoff run at all that you could share?
Osuna, somebody made him a poncho. And it was Blue Jay colors, and it had the Mexican flag on it. So I don't know. It wound up being in his locker, and I think they put his name on it. And he came over and thanked me for it. Like, I had nothing to do with it. I don't know where he, you know, like kids, they get, he's only 20. I don't know if he, somebody might have said, oh, it came from that guy over there, and there's like 200 people in the room, and he thought it was me, but I don't know. I said, no, I didn't send it to you. And then he thanked me again when he got to Kansas City. I said, I didn't have anything to do with it, you know.
What about Stroman? He was he seemed pretty excited after everything he did this playoff run.
Yeah, Stroman, I don't think Stroman's ever had a bad day at the ballpark. I mean, obviously he did in spring training when he tore the ACL, but he'd be their number one going into next year, and he's a guy that I think they can count on. You know, there used to be a saying in baseball, you don't trust a short right-hander. Well, he's the exception to the rule.
Or
don't depend on a short right-hander because they don't really last.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you said he'd be the number one heading into next year. So I get the vibe this offseason's going to be rather quiet.
I think if they're going to cut their payroll, I think not by a lot, but you know, maybe $15 million or something. I think Stroman's their guy. I think.
So I guess that would put them at like what $130 million next year. I've seen Davidi say 140.
Right, and I think they started at 125 and they finished at 139. I think, I don't have it in front of me, but they'd probably be down about 10 or 15 from that. I'm just going off the top. I don't think, I know I heard earlier on the fan that it was going to go to 100. I don't think that's right.
And yeah, McCann said that.
Somewhere else that it was going to be, stay exactly the same. Well, that's not right. I've been told it's going to, but the thing is, here's the thing, we're not going to know until July 31st. Like, I mean, the reason he was able to pull off all those moves was because he sandbagged on his money. You know, he didn't spend it. And, I mean, Reyes Tulowitzki was a wash. They actually saved money, but they added $7 million on Price. They added, I think they only spent $100,000 on Revere. Philly paid most of it. And then Mark Lowe, he was making $750,000, so they paid one-third of that. That's nothing for a major league team. And who else did they add? Who am I missing? Tulowitzki, Price, Lowe, Revere.
They had Hawkins, too.
Hawkins. I think Hawkins was like 2.5 or something, so one third of that.
And then Pennington was cheap when they picked him up.
Yeah, the guy they got from the Cubs at the last minute. Yeah,
oh, Darwin Burney.
What was it like seeing him pitch in a game, Pennington, the only guy ever to throw 90 miles an hour, positional player on the mound?
Yeah, that was not a proud moment in franchise. that's a knuckleball. It's like very, very good or very, very bad, and it was terrible that day. So.
If you're the GM of this team going into this offseason, how would you turn this team into a World Series caliber team?
Well, I'd re-sign David Price, but I don't think they've got the money to do that.
I'm pretty surprised they're not going to spend at all to go sign a Price.
Well, the thing is, they made what was the number Simmons hit? Was it 48 or 52 million or something, like what they had in added revenue from August, September, and October? And that's not counting next year. But so, you know, a lot of people have said, the number is bang on, but a lot of people have said, well, that gives them more money to carry over in the next year. But somebody explained it to me, the way it works in a publicly traded company is that, okay, there's a $50 million windfall for this year. Fine, perfect. That goes back to the shareholders. There's no carryover here.
Wow, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. That's what wiser guys than I. I mean, I don't know. I would probably. I can't do my expense account, but this is what an accountant told me. He said, people that are writing and saying that they can take the money and flop it into next year, that's not the way it works. They can spend more money on their budget, but they have to give that to the shareholders because it's publicly traded. And, you know, there's a guy in Vancouver, and there's a guy down east, and there's a bunch of people in Toronto. They've all got shares. They want money. They want return on their dividend, you know, and the Rogers, whatever the initials on the stock market is, you know.
So how does Tony LaCava fit into all this then? I mean, it's got to be tough for him to manage, I guess, manage his team with tight funds like that. And I saw today you said that Ross Atkins was a possible candidate as well. He's been with Cleveland for, what, 15 years now?
Yeah, he's been there quite a while, and the other guy is Josh Burns, who's a possibility. But I think Shapiro is very smart. The press conference, he came in and he said, you know, Gibbons is staying, the coaches are staying, and LaCava's the interim general manager. And I sent LaCava a note. I was still in New York, but I sent him a note. Did you see a picture of him, the sweater he was wearing?
No, I didn't see it.
He had a pullover, it looked like. He didn't have a sports coat on or anything. I said, I hope that sweater's interim, you know.
What'd he say?
Ha-ha, you know. I've known him since 99. He used to scout for the Expos.
Yep.
He used to come. I remember I met him. He was down at that place in Etobicoke. He was looking at Scott Thorman, who went in the first round of the Braves.
LaCava's kind of been Anthopoulos' right-hand man for a while. With him kind of scouting guys like Sanchez, Osuna, and even Hendricks, could you see them converting one of them into a starter next year?
Well, Andrew Tinnish is the one who drafted Sanchez, Syndergaard, and those guys. But Tony certainly deserves the credit for he was involved in Hendricks, like when they signed him as a... And who was the third guy you mentioned? Hendricks, Sanchez.
And Osuna.
Osuna. He was involved in that, but Ismael Cruz was the main guy. Yeah, I could see them. It's a strange thing is Sanchez wants to start and Osuna does not. So
really?
Well, yeah. I mean, the money, if you're trying to make any money, it's as a starter. I don't blame Sanchez for wanting to be a starter, and they certainly... They certainly have a need, but Osuna's a strange one. He wants to stay at the back end. He wants to be a closer.
Did he say why?
Just because he likes it. You know, the thing is, I guess he really hasn't known anything else in the big leagues. I mean, when you think of it, like a year ago, when they opened in April, they opened Yankee Stadium. The year before that, him and his name Castro, they were sitting in Dunedin waiting to be assigned to Vancouver until waiting for it to start in June. He was coming off the Tommy John. So,
do you think the fact that Osuna doesn't want to start probably has a lot to do with the fact that as a younger guy, I'm sure it can be tough in the majors to try and stay focused every single day when you're not playing. And the fact that being this closer, he does get an opportunity to go out there and play every single day, and he gets to really be in the zone and focus. Do you think for a guy at 20 years old that might be something that's a little bit more exciting to him as opposed to having to get ready every 5 days? Or do you think that has anything to do with it at all?
No, that could be it. I'm not really, like I said, I'm not really sure why he prefers it. But that's, I know there's guys that, like Paul Quantrill was like that. He wanted to be, he wanted to contribute every day as opposed to pitching and then waiting for 4 days, you know. He was a starter his first year here, and then he went back to the bullpen, and he'd pitch like 8 days out of 10. He was a rubber arm guy. But I'm not really sure what will happen when Osuna's agent has a talk with him and says, look, this is where the money is, kiddo. This is the path we're going down. You know, it'll all depend on what they come up with between now and opening day, you know, or now and reporting date, I guess, Dunedin.
Speaking of young bucks, have you got a chance to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at all?
No, I haven't seen him, no. No, I haven't seen him. I guess he's playing third base, and they're very happy with his progress.
Yeah, he's a big kid. They say he's bigger than Vladdy, his dad, already.
Yeah. I guess his first or second time there, he said he spoke. He said that somebody asked how good he was, and he said, compared to his father, he said, oh, I'm better than him.
He's pretty confident
at
that age.
16.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm sure his dad got a good laugh out of that one, too.
Yeah.
I was going to play a little game here with you, Bob, when we were mentioning earlier about
sure.
0 to 10. So we'll run through a list of free agents, and 10 being the highest of them possibly coming to Toronto, and 0 being not a chance at all. And you can feel free to add a line as to why or why not. So we're going to start with some starting pitchers here. Some of them are probably zeros, but I'm going to throw them out there anyways. Zach Greinke.
I think that's probably about a two.
David Price?
Probably about a one.
Wow,
I think they aren't going to spend the money. Mm. I'd be very surprised. Like I said earlier, that's the one I would go and get. They spent all that. They made all that money, so why not go and spend some?
Where do you think Price ends up? Somewhere like the Giants or the Dodgers?
The Cubs? I thought all along he'd go with the Cubs and be with Madden. See, he's a Tennessee kid. He's not a West Coast guy or an East Coast guy. So I guess the choice of the day nowadays for American League pitchers is to go to the National League. So their numbers are better, and they only face eight hitters for the first two times through the order.
And he can hit, too, since he likes to hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess that rules out Jordan Zimmermann, eh?
I haven't heard the price numbers on him. The amount on him. I don't know. I don't know how high he'd certainly be less than Greinke or Price. So
they said he was asking for anywhere from 18 to 22 million. They
didn't
say term though. Yeah, I didn't get any report on a term, but they said
the thing is. Estrada might be a little bit high, 13, but the term is good. It's 2 years. So I remember when Gillick was here, Gillick used to say, you sign a pitcher for 3 years, you're lucky to get 2 years out of him, and you should be happy to get 2 years out of him. So, I mean, like 3 or 4 years ago there when the Angels signed Pujols for 10 years and Fielder went to Texas for 10 years, like what do you expect to get out of that?
Yeah.
Like seven, six? I don't know.
So what was Gillick, what did he mean by if you get 2 years out of it?
He meant that the guys, that they're going to break down, they're going to get hurt, just like Eric Hansen did, although that wasn't him, just like Cottle broke down, trying to think. The thing is, they're like thoroughbred racehorses, and a lot of 2-year-old thoroughbred racehorses, and a lot of them make it to the 3-year-old season, a lot of them miss time because they're on the disabled list or spending time with a blacksmith,
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I got three other pitchers that I'd ask you about. An old one that they used to always link to the Jays was Jeff Samardzija.
I'd say about a week ago I might have said a 6 or 7, but now I think I'd say about a 4 maybe.
How come the interest has lulled down?
I heard they didn't like him, so.
Wow.
Who in particular didn't like him?
Some people with the Blue Jays. Now, that was, I don't know if Shapiro likes him, that was the old people in the old regime, Like, I don't know if there's some people still there, but I don't know if, who has the final say. I think I know who has the final say, but I don't know Shapiro's opinion.
What about a guy like Doug Fister, kind of a bounce-back guy? Shapiro always was kind of fond of him and his analytics when he was in Detroit.
Yeah, that guy'd probably be, I think we're going to give the highest mark there. They're probably a 6, I guess.
6, okay. And I guess a guy like Ibukuma would be probably on the low end as well?
Yeah, I don't
old,
know.
Injured.
I don't know. 2 years ago he was outstanding. I remember he pitched against Toronto, and I think he pitched 8 scoreless out there. I was out there I flew out the night they played that 19-inning game against Detroit.
Yep.
And I was finished. I wrote about Jose Abreu, and I finished, and I saw Toronto was in, with the 3-hour time difference. And so I remember phoning the Sky Dome and asking Mike, our other guy, I said, so how was your day? And it was only the 17th, and I was done.
So. Was that Rutsy?
Yeah, I was just teasing him.
Hey, this is his last season, eh? You retired?
Yeah, he was walking around. He was done as soon as Toronto was done, so when it got to 2-0 Texas, he was walking around holding up one. My magic number is one. I've only got one more loss, and then I'm done. And then they won, and then he's walking around holding up 4, and then it was 3-2. And yeah, he's a good fellow. He's going to golf and tour the world with his wife.
Good for him. What about the bullpen here? What about a guy like Antonio Bastardo, a lefty? Gillick had him for a little while.
Yeah.
Kind of expensive?
They certainly have a need there, the bullpen. Loop was not... The Loop this year was not the Loop of the past 2 years or 3 years. And Cecil was a failure as a closer, but what did he finish? 31 or 32 or 33 scoreless outings. And, they really missed him when he picked off Napoli, and then he got over and he tore his calf. So
yeah, he was their best relief pitcher from July on, I'd say.
Yeah.
What do you? He had 26 and a third scoreless, I think, you threw consecutively.
Yeah. Osuna ran a, you know, if you look up the home runs the first 3 months or 4 months, and then the last 2 months, you know.
What about a guy like Mark Lowe? You think he'll come back? I know he's a comedian in the locker room, I was told.
Yeah, he is. They think he's out of their price range. That's the last time I heard his name. That was in Kansas City, I think.
Did they say how much he was going to command?
No, they didn't. They didn't say. Here's a guy. He was on a split contract. He's the guy that gave up the home run to David Freese in St. Louis when he was with Texas, and shuttled around. And then, you know, last year he started out at Tacoma, and he didn't get. Called up to the big leagues till I don't know, May 5th or something.
Yeah, it was a while, and then he ended up. They said he was going to lose his job to Danny Farker and a couple other guys out there in Seattle.
Yeah.
What about in the infield? I know people are saying they might have a need at first base. Any shot a guy like Chris Davis? You even think Crush Davis is worth them throwing a contract at? I think he's going to want too much. I heard they want to eventually transition Bautista to first base.
I don't know about that. He's only got the 1 year left for sure, so. He could play there, but I like Davis as a player. I think he would be a big addition if you had enough money once you solve the pitching. And the thing about Davis, he's represented by Boris, which I think Boris
it's been a no-no for the Jays.
Yeah, well, it was a no-no for the Jays under Beeston, and I think arguably Boris represented two of the greatest Blue Jays ever, and Delgado and Alomar, and they fired him. They both fired him. So I think he had Bill Risley, and then I don't think he's had anybody since Alomar's first year. And he had the one kid that they drafted the 1 year, and Paxton.
Yeah, Paxton.
And they didn't sign him. So I mean, I don't even know why they go near the guy. You know, when they knew at the All-Star game the year before it was who had Paxton.
So what about a guy like Justin Morneau? You think he would come to Toronto?
Oh, he'd come to Toronto in a heartbeat, yep. He'd pay his own flight, yep.
What do you think the chances are of them offering him? If you had to go 0 to 10, what would you say? Maybe like a 5?
Well, I think I'd rather have him than Smoke.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a better defender, too.
Yeah, and Encarnacion is not a good defender.
Even Colabello, he's not really a first baseman.
Encarnacion doesn't want to be. Well, let me think. Colabello is right-handed, Morneau is left-handed. Yeah, that would work. Yeah.
Because the only other lefty they have is Matt Haig, and the Hanshing Tigers or whatever in Japan, they offered him a contract.
Yeah.
Apparently they're close to getting him. Any truth to that, or is that just the... I saw that on Yahoo, they reported that.
I hadn't heard that one, Cleve. You're ahead of me on the Mississauga North and the Hanshing Tigers.
Yeah, that's all the names I was going to ask you about that. Is there anybody else you could think of?
Or anybody that you'd go after?
I could see them, you know, just like it doesn't matter what the organization is, like whether the guy leaves Detroit and goes to Philly or the guy, I saw it the other day, DePoto left the Angels, went to Seattle, they made a trade with the Angels. I can see, I'll bet you either his first, second, or third trade is with Cleveland to get some kid that he likes and the other guys don't like.
I wish it was Corey Kluber, but it won't be.
No, I don't think it will be.
Carrasco was being thrown around a lot.
Well, that was a story. That was a good story. I think it was about 5 days before I found out that Cleveland said no to Pompey, Norris, and I forget who the third one was, Hoffman. So the point was, if they were to offer those three guys for Carrasco, they would offer them to other teams. And that's exactly what happened. They didn't trade Pompey, but they traded two of the three. That was the indication that they were certainly going to go for it. But I don't know why would Alex Anthopoulos and Beeston sell the farm if I'm sure Anthopoulos thought he was coming back on, like, Shapiro wasn't hired until August 31st. And the trades were made in July, you know, like you said earlier, that other story? I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I'll try and dig it up for you and send you the link, because when I read that, I was like, it doesn't make any sense, because they were also implying that Anthopoulos might have been a lame duck. But Shapiro didn't really take over until the end of August, like you were saying.
Well, How could he be a lame duck if he traded for Price and...
Yeah, exactly.
Quack, quack.
It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That kind of came out when the whole scolding report came out. What did you make of that?
Scolding report?
When they said Shaparro scolded Anthopoulos.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there's something to that. I don't know if he's... No, I don't know if... I think scolding is a little strong, but that's accurate from what I've heard, that he didn't like the Price trade, yeah, and he didn't like... Yeah, that's accurate that there was some friction from day one, yeah, and I think it was about September 5th in a meeting, but I was told scolding is too strong a term, but they didn't hit it off. Obviously, they didn't hit it off, or the guy wouldn't have left $10 million on the table, you know.
Yeah, I heard they had philosophical differences where Shaparro likes to kind of build and sign guys long-term within the organization, and Anthopoulos is kind of, we're just going to go out there and get guys and win no matter what it takes.
Well, that was the case last year, you know.
Yeah, because he built up all this prospect depth that they've had. That wasn't just an accident. I mean, that was years of him...
Yeah.
Getting these guys.
You know, you remember they had those, like, they'd trade for, or they'd claim Miguel Olivo and then let him go 3 days later or something.
Yeah.
And they get the draft pick. And then who else they did? There was, like, three extra picks they got.
So, Nate wants to play a little game here with you, a little funny game he says he's got.
It's just a little funny game. So, I'm going to give you two guys, their names, and I'm going to describe what they look like. And you got to tell me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how accurate it is.
You're going to give me two names.
Yep, two names.
And tell me what they look like.
Right. And like just a funny way of what they look like. And then you got to tell me how accurate it is from 1 to 10.
Okay.
So the first name is Terry Collins. Terry Collins looks like a guest character on Golden Girls that shows up to take Blanche on a date.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the second one is Bartolo Colon looks like the last Mohican who ate the second last Mohican.
I think Bartolo wins with a 9, and the other Terry Collins would be about an 8. I think I saw him on that show with Betty White.
All right, pretty good.
You guys got anything else you want to ask, Bob?
No, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Bob, it's been. I can't
so
thank
much.
You enough.
Yeah, I learned so much just in this last half hour that we had.
So there's nothing else you guys want to ask Bob?
No, we're good. Thanks a lot, Bob, for taking the time. It's much appreciated, and we hope to have you on at some point soon.
All right, boys.